News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, 6 minutes after 8 o'clock on your Tuesday. Weather, well, you know, I don't know. It's cooling enough that in the morning, like Mount Vernon got down to 64, so that's something.
Good for you, Mount Vernon.
We're closer to 70, 72 degrees here in Mobile, and we will be hot again today, according to Dr. Bill Williams.
Yeah, and some rain possible on the weekend, and as far as looking at the Western Caribbean, like I know so many of you are keeping tabs on after what Helene did, coming from that same spot last week, Dr. Bill said we should know more about its possible development as the week rolls on. If it does turn into anything, it's likely not to make its way into the Gulf until this weekend or possibly early next week. So we'll keep you updated on that all the way through with Dr. Bill, plus traffic information. Thank you, Cheese Wagon, on the text line. Crash I-10 Bayway westbound at the 28 mile marker. Okay, he just texted and he said that's been cleared by ALDOT. He says they're now at the bottom of the 27 ramp right shoulder. So if you're traveling I-10 westbound, just be aware there might be a little bit of a slowdown for you heading that way.
Quinn Hillier, quinnhillier.com, and the Washington Examiner on our show on this Tuesday. Good morning, Quinn.
Good morning.
I know
good
you
morning wanted everybody listening.
Yeah, and I know you, as a Georgetown alum, maybe even a classmate of Motumbo, I know you wanted to take a moment to talk about his career and his life.
Yeah, Dikembe Mutombo died yesterday in his late 50s of brain cancer. What a shame. He might be one of the finest human beings ever to play professional sports. His humanitarian, I mean, in addition to being a multi-time NBA Defensive Player of the Year and all that, he built a hospital from the ground up in Congo, where he's from. He started schools there. He just did so many different things to help people out, you know, help poor people out, do just wonderful humanitarian work. And we need more people like that. It's a shame that he's gone. So even he might not be the greatest player ever, but he was a darn good player and an even finer human being, and I just wanted to say. And no, he was a few years behind me at Georgetown, but very, very, obviously everybody at Georgetown revered him.
Yeah, I mean, he just had this likability. And he's in a commercial that's currently playing, I think.
A Geico commercial,
he's like blocking groceries. Yeah. His main thing was he blocked all your shots. I saw one.
No.
And then he wagged the finger. I saw one clip where in one sequence he blocked like three or four shots in 3 or 4 seconds.
Yeah.
They kept trying under the basket, and he kept saying, no.
And actually, one other thing I'm just saying on Wikipedia, not only did he do all that, but he loved America, too. He even served on the Board of Trustees of the National Constitution Center in Philadelphia.
Really?
Wow. To the U.S. Constitution.
Wow.
I mean, just wonderful, wonderful guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you wonder how many doorways he ran into over the years. 7'2". I mean, I've hit quite a few hanging lamps, but Dikembe.
I think after a while you get used to it. You see him coming.
7'2", size 22 sneakers, absolute giant of a human being. And like Quinn said, sounds like he was a giant humanitarian as well.
Amazing things back in the continent of Africa, really amazing stuff.
So politically, Quinn, there's a lot of different directions we could go this morning, and we'll try to go. But why don't we talk about something that I guess is leaving the news, although it really shouldn't. And that's Governor Ivey and her battle against the Department of Veterans Affairs, specifically the director of that department. And if Lanyap weren't reporting on this, I don't know what we would know. They had a whistleblower or two who were on the board, the VA board, and said they were contacted by the governor's office trying to figure out where their votes were on potentially ousting the VA director. That meeting never came to fruition because the director ended up saying he would resign at the end of this year. But this has been a really bad look for the Ivey administration, and it's not a story that's being discussed much, Quinn.
No, and it really should be. And just make a couple of points. Number one, Alabama always ranks in like the bottom five in mental health in the country anyway, in services for mental health. So it's not like we're doing well anyway. We also rank low in services for veterans, although the Vets Recovery Center down here in Mobile is changing that. So the good guy is Admiral Kent Davis, who's the head of Department of Veterans Affairs, or whatever the name of the department is at the state level. And I read his ethics complaint, and it is absolutely outrageous that he is the fall guy. And I talked about this before, but now I read it even more closely. He said that he did not want to file the ethics complaint, but his reading of state law made it convinced him that he had to by law, or else he would be subject to criminal penalties for not reporting an ethics violation. So he writes that he is reluctantly doing this, but doing it because he thinks the law requires him to do it. And for doing what he thinks the law requires, Governor Ivey forces him out. Now, that is an outrage in itself. It is effectively punishing a whistleblower. And to me, that should be one of the biggest scandals we've seen in a long time. But the bigger scandal is what he was complaining about, which is, as I said the other day, the department, the Veterans Department got $7 million from the feds to give to veterans services. But it came through the mental health department first. They already had an agreement. It was already announced. And then because the head of mental health at the state level was angry at one of the people on the veterans board, she reneged, took back the $7 million that was supposed to go to veterans, that had already been announced to go to veterans. And there's all sorts of other, you know, insider dealings and all this kind of stuff. And so he files an ethics complaint about all these insider dealings that's going to cost veterans $7 million. And he's the one that gets fired or forced out? That is an absolute outrage. And anybody who cares about veterans and anybody who cares about decency and anybody who cares about ethics should be up in arms.
Yeah, page one of the Ivy playbook, though.
It is.
It's page one, and you've been talking about this forever. You can do your job well, poorly, whatever. If you're on her side, you're safe. But that's not the case here.
Yeah, no, it showed us a couple things. It showed us the Ethics Commission, how seriously they actually take complaints of ethics violations from state departments. And apparently, it depends on who you are, how seriously they take those ethics complaints.
Yeah.
And then, just like you said, Ivy, who sits on the sidelines for so many things, this one, she went full speed ahead, do everything she could to defend the Ethics Commission and her cabinet, and oust a VA director who, by all conversations I've had with veterans, is beloved in the state.
Was doing as good a job as any we've ever had, is what people that I think know what they're talking about have told me.
Yeah.
Exactly. And on top of that, it's all in favor of this insider-dealing mental health system that doesn't do anybody any good. It's in the bottom five in the nation, and there needs to be a major investigation into a lot of the dealings at the mental health delivery system in the state and here in South Alabama too.
And as far as
leave it at that.
Well, and I get you. But as far as the governor, who would be responsible for? You say this should be a big scandal. It looks like it's not going to be, right? So it's over. So who would be? Would it be Marshall, the AG? I mean, who would be the one to say, hey, you're out of bounds here on a number of reasons?
Well,
but it doesn't look like he's not moving in that direction.
Well, number one, if we had newspapers worth a darn in the state,
you're right.
Other than Lanyap, which Rob Hulbert is doing a great job covering this. But, AL.com is completely ignoring it and infuriating me in doing so. And then, yes, Marshall should be looking into it. But then again, Marshall has done nothing to the Ethics Commission in the past.
Yep.
And they have all sorts of problems, as Rob Hulbert and Lanyap have reported. But Marshall should be looking into it. State legislators should be looking into it. Look, our local guy, I think it was Chip Brown, mm-hmm. and I think Anthony Jones, Senator Jones, had a bill to do some good things for the veterans, and the powers that be came in and gutted it, changed it completely last session. There is a very powerful in-group that has monopolies, that has contracts, et cetera, and they don't like to be messed with. But our legislators need to get tough and start opening an inquiry into this, having oversight, exercise their oversight responsibility, because this whole thing, both mental health and veterans affairs, deserves a major look, and things need to be cleaned up. And meanwhile, Admiral Davis should be reinstated.
Yeah, and you know, like Dan said, you know, this story might be leaving the newspapers. Some people probably haven't even heard about it, but with a gubernatorial race on the horizon, that might be something that a smart candidate would bring up. Especially, you know, I'm not sure if Lieutenant Governor Will Ainsworth has talked about this specific instance yet, about what's going on with the VA and Ivy, but in a challenger who's talking about maybe changing the way things are done at the state level, this seems ripe for that to be used.
Oh, and it's a huge veterans community in the state of Alabama, and a challenger that stands up for veterans would do pretty darn well.
Quinn, real quick, something you said got my attention, because I had a conversation with a pretty wise gentleman a month or so back, and we were talking about media and media coverage and things like that. And he said, I think that the downfall of newspapers in across the country, really, that is a major player, a major factor with the misbehavior of people in office. It's like if you have the threat that your face and image and the headline, you're in the headlines the next day in a major paper in Birmingham, Mobile, whatever, that it can also, it can kind of curb your actions before you even take them. And in some way, you know, TV stations aren't really in the business of digging in, you know, for in terms of protecting their profits, mostly.
Or a long-term story. It's not really a specialty of...
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But just mention the role that newspapers used to play in situations like this. Because it was on your doorstep every day and every afternoon in some cases.
Exactly. And I mean, what the Newhouse national chain did to Alabama when they first cut all the papers to 3 days a week and then eliminated actual papers entirely, and now have gone statewide and meanwhile cut all the staff. So now we've got some really good reporters locally, but there are only like four of them where we used to have about 60. You know, we've got, I think, four reporters covering both Mobile and Baldwin County combined instead of 60. That makes a big difference. And when you don't see it in print on your lawn every day, at your breakfast table every day, it makes a difference. And when you only have four people instead of 60 for the entire coastal region, that makes a difference.
Yeah.
It's an atrocity, no matter, even though, as I say, the reporters they do have are doing an excellent job, but they're extremely overworked. I mean, there's only so much they can do.
Yeah, not enough amount there.
Quinn, let's talk a bit about some national politics. And tonight you have the vice presidential debate. This will be in New York City, CBS. You get O'Donnell and Brennan, I believe, not Dan, but
Margaret, me.
That'll be moderating the debate. How important is a VP debate in this day and age?
Actually, I think it makes a huge difference. People don't say that they vote based on who the VP candidate is, but a VP debate can set or change the overall tone of a campaign. People forget how important it was for Dick Cheney in 2000 when he had a very collegial debate with Joe Lieberman, but the Bush campaign was sort of floundering at the time, and Cheney steadied it. There are all sorts of other examples where vice presidential debate in what year was that? I'm drawing the blank. But anyway, the point is that they changed the tone, or they changed the trajectory of the campaign. And that's important. Right now, both campaigns in their own ways are flailing. If somebody can tonight sort of change the tone, change the concentration of the campaign mm-hmm. from all of this stuff that nobody cares about to talking about the economy again and getting their side, you know, one step up, it could make a big difference. I'm actually predicting, even though I don't like J.D. Vance at all, I'm predicting he's going to wipe the floor with Tim Walz.
I think he almost has to be careful that he doesn't run up the score and look like a bully. I think he's so far advanced intellectually.
I'm just looking forward to whatever whopper Tim Walz will tell tonight. Yeah. maybe we'll get a fun new major lie about his life story.
More with Quinn on the way. Mobile Mornings. Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, Quinn Hillier, Washington Examiner, and QuinnHillier.com joined us on Tuesdays. Quinn, I know you wanted to make another point real quick about the vice presidential debate before we move on from that.
Right. I was trying to think of the other example where it really made a difference. And it was in 2016. People forget the Trump campaign was flailing around the Access Hollywood tape, et cetera, et cetera. His first debate with Hillary was, it was not necessarily very good. And then Mike Pence debated Tim Kaine, and Mike Pence steadied the ship. People forget this, but he wiped the floor with Tim Kaine and focused on issues that people cared about. And it wasn't that everybody was saying, I'm going to vote for Trump because I like Mike Pence, but it refocused the attention on the issues that favored conservatives and that completely disfavored Hillary Clinton and her scandals and all the rest of it. So a vice presidential debate made a difference in 2000 with Cheney, and it made a big difference in 2016 with Mike Pence.
Yeah, Tim Kaine, I remember, was kind of like Tim Walz light. Like he was just a little less energy, but he still had that county fair kind of thing going on that Walz has.
100%.
Also, big news this week, Quinn, or I guess late last week, it's all running together, but Mobile Mayor Sandy Stimson announces he will not run for re-election, and I know we're talking national politics this year, but next year, a ton of municipality elections, including mayor of Mobile. This could be a pretty large race.
Could be a very big field, and expect some names to come from the business or veterans community, not just from already elected officials. But it is going to be a wide-open race. Mobile needs to get this right. We've been absolutely blessed for the last 12 years with Mayor Stimson. And, you know, everybody can nitpick here and there, but overall, he's been one of the best mayors I've ever seen in any city, anywhere in my life. And we need to keep that sort of public-spiritedness going, the goodwill, the fiscal responsibility, the vision. We need to get this right. There are all sorts of pretty good people that are considering running, but you know, we got to not worry about race. We got to not worry about political divisions or religious divisions. We just got to get the person who can get out there and keep what's going on right now, keep it going, and then maybe, bring in a couple of new ideas. But we need competence.
Yep.
Competence.
I agree.
Yeah, good idea. Hey, Quinn, if folks want to read what you have to write or what you are writing, how can they get that?
You can subscribe to QuinnHillier.com, and every Tuesday morning you'll get something in your inbox for absolutely free. Or just you can get most of my stuff by Googling Quinn Hillier and Washington Examiner.
Thanks, my man, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Yes, all right, 251-343-0106. That's our number. You can text, you can call, you can leave us a talkback message on the FM Talk 106.5 app. Coming up, we'll talk about this strike that includes plenty of workers down here at the Port of Mobile. And also, with the VP debate tonight, we'll bat that around a little bit. And Gina Raimondo gets destroyed on CNBC, the Commerce Secretary. We'll talk about that on the way. 834 FM Talk 106.5 in Mobile Mornings. Coming to the text line here in a moment, 251-343-0106. This segment of the show brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Trey Bennett and his crew have been doing some great work, and they've been doing it for a long time here in Mobile and Baldwin counties, making junk disappear. So easy, all you have to do is point, and the respectful and professional teams with 1-800-GOT-JUNK will take care of that junk problem for you, whether you're bringing them out to your business or your home. Once you give them a call at 1-800-GOT-JUNK, they'll give you free on-site estimates with all-inclusive pricing and no hidden fees. And then once they actually come out to take care of the job, they'll be in and out in no time, and you can just get on with your day. They have right now almost 300 reviews on Google for 1-800-GOT-JUNK Mobile, and every one of these reviews, 5 stars, the best you can get. One left just a couple weeks ago by Elizabeth, who said these guys were great, they communicated well, showed up on time, and were extremely polite young men. The professionalism was appreciated, and you'll appreciate that professionalism as well. Plus, get rid of all that junk. So set up your appointment today. You can call the number, 1-800-GOT-JUNK, or the appointment can just as easily be set up online at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com.
You know, we have a lot of people that have strong opinions on a job that they're viewing from the sidelines. They've never done it. They've never been at the port or worked down there, but there's a lot of opinions on this strike because it's big news nationally, and in a way, you know, it's certainly big news right here in Mobile.
Yeah, and it kind of, in this story of the strike, it brings in a lot of different elements of the future of the American workplace, including blue-collar jobs like this. Mm-hmm. It also ties in COVID and how the Longshoremen's Association is using that and saying, hey, during COVID, when everyone else was sitting at home, we were out here working and we weren't getting a pay increase, and these companies keep making more and more money. That's kind of their line of argument. It's been a real treat being introduced to this figure here over the last few days.
Yeah, Danny DeVito's first cousin.
Yeah, the president of the International Longshoremen's Association, Harold Daggett. And if you just want to, you know, in your mind, if you haven't heard this man speak, picture what you think a union boss would sound like.
He's it.
He's it. Here's some of what Daggett had to say about this strike, which began at midnight.
Let me explain something to you. These people today don't know what a strike is.
Right.
When my men hit the streets from Maine to Texas, every single port will lock down.
Every single port will lock down. And Andrew Ramey with NBC 15 spoke with Mobile Chamber CEO and President Bradley Byrne, of course, the former congressman. He knows a thing or two about labor and union relations. And here's what he told Ramey about this strike, which began just a few hours ago.
This is a complete stoppage, which means things that we depend upon won't be able to get into and out of the United States. The Walmart Mega Distribution Center in West Mobile won't be able to receive any more stuff from overseas, which means a lot of stuff ain't going to be on their shelves, which means a lot of stuff's not going to be on Walmart shelves.
And, you know, when there are strikes and you hear from different sources about how bad things will get, and I know a lot of times that's used to, you know, leverage the position of someone on one side of the negotiating table or the other, so they can kind of take advantage of Americans' ignorance on certain things like this. Mm-hmm. But I'm just thinking...
You're talking about people getting elected as well, but go ahead.
I'm just... With the damage that Hurricane Helene left all the way from where it made landfall in Florida and through Georgia and into the mountains and, of course, North Carolina. I mean, we've seen interstates fall apart up there in some of these roadways and some pretty major thoroughfares like I-40, where you see big trucks all day long moving both directions. So that's already a pretty major issue when it comes to our supply chain. How bad could this be, depending on, you know, how long will they strike, first off? But Byrne says, you know, even just former Congressman Byrne says, even just one day of striking would result in, I guess, kind of like that accordion when you get out there on the roadways, and maybe there's no accident out there, but people are slowing down at the tunnel, and it just kind of adds up and adds up, and the next thing you know, you're sitting at a dead stop at Michigan, right?
And it's almost like when there is an accident, they clear the accident, but the traffic isn't cleared yet. And I think he was alluding to there being supply chain issues. Even if it's one day, it might affect us for 5 days.
That's exactly the number. One, they say it'll affect you for a week or 5 days. Here's more from Byrne talking with Andrew Ramey.
The shutdown doesn't mean when they turn it back on, it comes right back. You know, for every day or so of shutdown, there's, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 days it takes to recover. So even a one-day shutdown could have an effect for a week.
Yeah, and so this is affecting the port here in Mobile. It's East Coast and Gulf Coast ports. So from Maine to Texas, that means the West Coast is not. I think they had their own kind of holdout and near strike maybe last year or early this year.
They had a deal during COVID, did they not? Were they not?
I'm trying to remember. There was something, but, you know, it's not as easy as I was reading last night. People who are having goods imported. It's not as easy as them rerouting those ships to the West Coast and putting it in Oakland or wherever, because even though they're not the same union, they're not the ILA, they are in a union, and they're saying we're not taking the work that another union is not taking because of the strike. Daggett, the ILA president's pretty threatening language, and I don't know if this was in like a 60 Minutes interview or something, or maybe it's PBS because they add a little music, but listen to, he means business.
Who's going to win here in the long run? You're better off sitting down and let's get a contract and let's move on with this world. And in today's world, I'll cripple you. I will cripple you, and you have no idea what that means. Nobody does.
Yeah, and so the debate here, the art of the deal. So you have the ILA, who they're asking for a 77% wage increase over 6 years just to sit down and talk. So until it gets to that, until the offer from the other side, port employers, gets to 77%, they're acting like they won't even have these discussions. Biden's administration has been stepping in a little bit more, although they're still kind of hands off. But they've been pushing the port employers to come to some kind of deal. So before they officially went on strike overnight, once the contract expired, they had upped their offer to a 50% pay increase over 6 years. They had been at 40% as their offer. They also said they're going to improve the benefits for these dock workers. But this is a big deal. The union, 45,000 dock workers. And one of the discussion points in this negotiation is about automated workers. And that, I think, kind of began right here in Mobile.
It did, and then it did, but you don't hear the ILA president mentioning the automated thing at all. Mm-hmm. Now, he may have in other statements. And also Bradley Byrne says that's kind of a red herring because it's not.
He said it'd been around and they hadn't used it in previous.
Right.
Here's Byrne.
Automations are just a total red herring. The automation they keep referring to with the Port of Mobile has been in place since 2008. They've negotiated two contracts since then, never brought that up as an issue.
So it's interesting. You know, the longer the strike goes on, maybe there will be some issues getting supplies off the shelves.
But doesn't it sound like have you ever heard of a wage
disagreement? Or?
Well, an ask, a request, a starting point, 77%
increase. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty hefty. And it seems to be what the workers are saying is that these companies are making up, you know, no pun intended, a boatload of money.
Yeah.
But they're evidently making a lot of money. And they're like saying, we just want part of that. And I guess what they're contending is, this is how much money they're making. Mm-hmm. They're making so much money, our increase should be 77%. And so without seeing the numbers that they've seen in terms of the entire industry, I don't know, maybe you don't know, but that's just seems like that's a big ask.
Right. And of course, I don't understand, you know, the intricacies of this negotiation the way that someone who works down at the docks every day would.
Yeah.
I do have to wonder, we've seen so many threats of strikes from different, you know, professions over the last several years. And it seems every time, whether it's flight controllers or, you know, someone who works in the energy field who's doing this or what we have right here with the ports, the Biden administration gets in, right? Mm-hmm. And they end up pressuring one side or the other to come to a deal. And they come in the last minute and quote unquote save the day. And I'm wondering if the union here isn't using that as an extra bit of leverage. Hey, if we do hold out 5 weeks before the election and shut down, you know, ports that bring in and export at least 50% of the goods coming to and leaving America, then what is the Biden administration going to do? They're going to have to step in to save face. And when they do that, do you think they're going to go against the union or do you think they're going to try to come to a deal that works out better in the favor of the union? That's what if I were the union boss, I would be doing here. So I'm not sure that the Biden administration jumping in on past negotiations is necessarily a good thing.
And the union boss himself sounds very self-assured, right?
Yeah.
He's using language that's threatening. He's coming across as somebody who, you don't have to worry about me, right? Like he's a big, tough guy. Maybe he is. But I do know that his the audio clips we played of him this morning doesn't sound like a guy who's on the panic.
No, it sounds like he's had a roadside bratwurst or two. You know, he knows what he's doing. He's had the heroes from Broadway and Nashville. Jason says these people are going to negotiate themselves out of a job. Average workers are trying to get 5 or 6%. Look at the teachers that just got 3%, and these guys want 77. Insanity. Now, I will say, Jason, I think the teachers have gotten 3% here, 3% there, 5% here. It seems like every other month I'm seeing a pay increase for teachers. Not that some don't deserve it, but I see it a lot. Jerry Fort Morgan says, let me see what I can read from what Jerry put out there. He says, I think the most interesting thing about the strike is that the present administration has made it cost so much more to survive than it did a few years ago, and they need a good contract. 6 years is a long time to be tied to a contract. That's a good point there. Paul says, what an opportunity for Trump right now. I think he's taking advantage of, and it sounds actually coarse now that it's coming out of my mouth, but with the hurricane relief yesterday and going to Valdosta and being on the ground and getting footage there, while Biden says he's doing everything he can, the optics are he's sitting in D.C. with a phone while Trump is on the ground. So I think that's worked in Trump's favor as far as campaigning goes. Far as the strike, I'm not sure how either side would come out a winner in this as far as the political campaigns.
And politically, has the government moved super swiftly on this situation in North Carolina and Tennessee?
It depends on who you're reading and that's they're saying, right?
I've read some things that would say, no, they have not. And I would hate to think that's got to do with any kind of political leaning. Now, the town of Asheville itself, I would think, is a Democratic town because it's a city and it's got a very, like I'm the Chamber of Commerce president, I don't know. But from what I do understand about Asheville, it's a city that's got a lot of things that feed off of the resort up there.
Okay.
Much like Fairhope does.
Like Biltmore?
The Biltmore. Much like Fairhope does with Point Clear. A lot of those businesses are stores for people who are staying at Point Clear. Otherwise, they wouldn't even be there. So in the same way, Asheville, kind of an artsy city that prides itself in that kind of
younger
thing.
Younger, maybe.
Yeah. And having never been there, just reading about it and seeing some things about it through the years, that's the impression I get. So the rural area, probably very red, but the city itself, the population center, which looks like it's pretty wiped out. That would probably be more of a Democratic voting base.
We still have plenty of texts about this port strike, also about Asheville and the storm damage, and I have to play that clip for you of the Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo going on Squawk Box on CNBC, and well, depending on who listens to it, maybe getting her butt handed to her in this debate. We'll get to that on the other side of Mobile Mornings right after the break.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings. Dalton found some audio that was pretty stunning this morning. We'll get to that as it relates to North Carolina
Also a text here from an unnamed texter. Good morning. October surprise? One, Biden and Harris will end the longshoremen strike. Two, they will deport about 100,000 illegals this month.
Is that
coming?
I haven't seen that they're deporting 100,000 illegal immigrants. I've seen they're expanding the asylum restrictions that they put on back in June that actually has reduced the number of people coming in, just low from the massive highs they were, right?
Yeah.
But, yeah, that'd be interesting. That would be a October surprise. There's also the possibility of the October surprise working the other way. Did you see yesterday you had a House Oversight Committee who is looking into Tim Walz's ties with China, and they said they had whistleblower allegations about an internal employee group with the Department of Homeland Security, an internal employee group chat discussing serious concerns they had about Walz's ties to China. You had James Comer, who's the oversight panel chairman, at a congressional hearing yesterday, or they sent a letter to Mayorkas, the Homeland Security Secretary, and said, through whistleblower disclosures, the committee has learned of a non-classified Microsoft Teams group chat among Department of Homeland Security employees titled NST-NFT Biweekly Sync. That would stand for Nation State Threat National Function Team. And I guess in this group chat, they were talking about their that they were worried that Walz has made so many trips to China and did so while he was a member of the National Guard and speaks so highly of them. And Comer, so he's asked for those communications, which they say are non-classified. He wants them from the DHS by October 7th. But we've seen plenty of times where you have these congressional committees who ask for, or they subpoena someone to come speak before them in Congress, or they ask for specific documents, whether it's the FBI or DHS or who have you, and then they just don't get them. And the story doesn't get the pull anywhere except Fox News or maybe conservative-leaning sites.
Well, if there's something that's embarrassing or worse, they've only got a month to stall.
Mm-hmm.
So you would think that'd be the way to go, right?
A couple other texts here about the strike at the port. John says, fire them all, hire new people. 75% raise is ridiculous. The real Sam says the longshoremen just want a percentage of what they generate. If you can't understand that, then you won't understand. Same as professional sports. They're just getting a percentage of what they're creating.
Yeah, that number came from somewhere is what I'm saying. So it sounds crazy to my ear and your ear, but if the industry is doing so well and they're saying we want this is the, you know, we want this would put us at a certain percentage, it sounds crazy, or maybe they do it unapologetically. 77% sounds like a damn good raise, but if they're just saying we're worth it, look at the numbers. We don't have access to those numbers.
Yeah, Moz says 77% over 6 years. What's that about 15% a year? Not as bad if you look at it that way. Brandon says, I'm out of work from the strike. My trucks have enough loads to run today, but after today, we're done.
Yeah, Chris, this is going to affect a lot of jobs around here, not just those jobs.
Yeah. So keep those texts coming. I did want to play this. Gina Raimondo, who is the Commerce Secretary, and has kind of stuck her foot in her mouth a couple times over the last few weeks. Remember, at the DNC, she was being interviewed about some Bureau of Labor Statistics numbers that looked bad that had come out that day.
Yeah.
She's the Secretary of Commerce. She should know about these things, but she called it fake Trump news.
I know, and it was from her office.
And then she said something that the Trump team had issues with after the second assassination attempt.
Almost like he needs to be eradicated. She used verbiage that wasn't wise considering what's been going on with Trump.
So Raimondo went on Squawk Box on CNBC. You'd think that'd be relatively friendly territory yesterday, but she ran into the conservative commentator on there, Joe Kernan. I just thought this was kind of an interesting back and forth. Here is that segment on CNBC from yesterday.
When we've had surrogates on for the Trump Trump campaign, they have said that he doesn't really mean any of these things. They would just be tools for negotiation.
Then why does he say them? Why would I believe that? He says it. He's doubled down on it. He repeats it. By the way, he was president. We know what that resulted in.
Seems like you kind of forgot that earlier. Yeah, and the tariffs that he did put on were continued by the Biden administration. There was no recession. Real wages were actually up. Stock market did well. A lot of very positive things happened. Record low unemployment until the pandemic. So it's just weird to act like it's a complete wild card what kind of president he would be when you had You've got a blueprint right there of what kind of president he would be. And Kamala Harris has been vice president for 4 years, and we've seen exactly what kind of vice president she would be.
Right. What have you seen? You've seen more manufacturing in this country since any time since World War II.
I've seen real wages go down. I've seen, crime.
That's not true.
What's not true?
I just don't agree with that.
Real weekly wages have gone down. Average weekly wages are still down from when Biden came into office.
When Biden came into office, we saw sky-high unemployment,
inflation. Prior to that, it was...
So they just kind of went at it for a couple minutes there.
Yeah, she's disagreeing with facts, I'm afraid. Trying to look at this, both sides. She's disagreeing with facts.
Right, yeah.
You're therefore in the wrong.
Yeah, some would say that, Dan.
Or am I out of my mind? 8:59, Jeff Porcio's on the way.